Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Now, chronic pain is pain that will persist for more than 3 months. And you might be surprised, because I certainly was, to hear that up to 1 in 3 adults in Ireland wake up most days with chronic pain. Well, Pain Awareness Month is a global campaign to raise awareness of chronic pain during the month of September. And the National Charity for People with Chronic Pain, Chronic Pain Ireland, has launched this year's campaign with the theme Waking Up to Pain. Now, 31-year-old Sharon is a chronic pain patient and she joins me now. Sharon, how are you?
Good morning, Lottie. Thanks for having me on.
No, thank you so much for coming on. I suppose, Sharon, how long have you been living with chronic pain? Let's find that out.
About 5 or 6 years now.
Wow.
I was diagnosed there, in 2019 when I was 27. So it kind of started when I was 26.
And when you were 26, what were the first signs? Like, were there warning signs that something wasn't right?
Yeah, definitely. So it kind of followed from a period of my life where I was working really hard and I was just in a high stress state for such a long period of time. I was getting up early and to get into work for like stupid o'clock and then getting home or leaving work at stupid o'clock and working really hard and doing everything and being a complete yes girl. And that high stress state or like state of mind just kind of led into getting sick, getting a lot of flus, a lot of colds, back and neck issues. Like, that stress just kind of manifested itself to a state where I just couldn't work. Like, I was being bullied in work. It was a real toxic environment. Just not fun at all. And eventually it just led me to, I had to pack up the job. I had to leave. I had to move home. I was just too ill. And then it kind of started, once I was kind of getting better from those normal things, just being sick and having that bad flu or whatever, it led me then into getting this pain in my elbow. I just woke up with it. I couldn't straighten it. And that lasted for, let's say, a week before it jumped to the other elbow. And then I went, oh, hold on a second. I thought you were my left elbow. What are you doing with my right elbow? And then it jumped back again. And then it started to go into my hips and then my knees. And then it started spreading. And it was just pain all over in multiple points. And it took me about 3 weeks before I kind of like, because I thought, like everyone, like, oh, I must have sprained it. I must have slept funny. I must have just, you know, picked up something really heavy or something. But then when it started moving around, I was kind of like, look, I need to go to the doctor with this. This is getting ridiculous. So I went into the doctor and did some normal tests. And they all came back normal. And it was like, oh, sure, just wait and see. It'd be grand, it'd be grand. And then
were you
I was
scared
like, no,
at that point, Sharon?
Yeah, I was a good bit. Yeah, I was kind of like, what the hell is happening? Like, I'm going in and the doctors are like, oh, it's grand. Like, and I was like, well, look, it's all in my joints. Could it be arthritis? And they're like, no, you're too young for that. You're too young for that. And I've come to learn now, you're never too young for anything. Like, don't believe a doctor when they say you're too young for that. It's just so dismissive. It's ridiculous. So all the results came back normal and they were like, there's nothing wrong with you. And I'm like, I'm telling you, there is. Like, there's
absolutely. So did you go for a second opinion or...
Yeah, I did. I went to a couple of doctors then just to kind of be like, you know, what's the story? I need to get different tests done. And I was getting like ultrasounds done and different scopes and stuff like that done for various issues like symptoms. And I was kind of picking their brain, kind of going like, what could this be? And they were just like, no, I don't know, nothing really. And then eventually I just annoyed my doctor so much that he sent me to a rheumatologist.
Okay.
Fortunately, the rheumatologist kind of went, right, come in and did a series of, you know, tweaks in the body and bending my arm and bending my knee and saying, right, I know what you have, he said with a big smile on the face. And I was like, fantastic, what is it? And he was like, it's fibromyalgia. And that moment was just, it was so bittersweet. It was just kind of like the elation of finally having a reason, finally having someone saying, there's something wrong with you, you're not crazy, there is something there, you have fibromyalgia. But then the sinking feeling of, what the hell is that?
That's what I was going to ask. When it was said to you, had you heard of fibromyalgia before, or was this your first time hearing about it?
First time hearing about it. Never heard of it before.
Okay.
And it sounds like such a scary word, you know, fibromyalgia.
And how did the doctor explain it to you?
Well, one thing that he said, and he stressed, and it has stuck with me, and I often think about it, is that it's not degenerative, but it is a lifelong condition. So it's not, you're not going to damage your body by having it as such, but it is a lifelong condition and it's a pain condition. And it affects multiple tender points in your body, and it affects your brain, and you'll have brain fog and, you know, cognitive disabilities, and you just be in general pain the whole time. And there's not much that they can do. There's not much of a treatment plan, and the treatment plan that they do have is trial and error. So,
God, Sharon, as a young woman in her 20s, how did you process that?
I don't know. I'm still processing it.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely. Haven't a clue.
And what was the treatment plan that the doctor put in front of you?
Treatment plan for it was SSRIs at the time, and go for a series of them for quite a while and see if they work for you. And then after that, for me, the ones that I went on didn't work. So I was kind of like, well, what's the next step? Is there anything else I can try? And they were kind of like, no. They just kind of shrugged. And I was like, oh, okay. They were like over-the-counter painkillers. And so it's just like Solpadeen, ibuprofen, you know, like paracetamol, wow, ibuprofen. And you can't take them for too long either. So and it's a lifelong condition. So you have to spread it out and be mindful of like, okay, what am I going to do on these days that I need that extra oomph to kind of get me through or to get me down the road?
That's tough. That's very, I mean, listen, we've got Professor Dominic Hegarty on the line, who is a consultant in pain management and neuromodulation at the Mater Private Hospital in Cork. He's an associate professor in pain medicine, a faculty member of ACERT training at University College Cork, which promotes educational training in pain medicine. So he joins us now. Good morning, Dr. Hegarty.
Good morning, Lottie. Good morning, Sharon.
Good morning.
Is what Sharon's describing typical of a patient who would be learning about a first-time diagnosis of fibromyalgia?
I suppose in many ways it is, because it's a very convoluted way to get the diagnosis of fibromyalgia. And I'd like to thank you and, 2FM for taking this on board, because awareness is the key. I mean, why would someone like Sharon, 26, going on 27, suddenly have to find out something that's going to impact them long term unless they know these things exist? So having this pattern of eventually coming to a diagnosis for something like fibromyalgia is a very typical pattern altogether. Sometimes chronic pain comes a little bit more focused. People have knee pain, back pain, headaches, etc. So there's a bit of more focus to it. So certainly not everybody fits into this pattern, but this is not unheard of.
Can I ask you, Dr. Hegarty, Sharon was describing there the process she went through where, you know, the doctors were kind of, she wasn't coming, getting an answer, really, which must have been incredibly frustrating. Why is that? Is it because fibromyalgia is just difficult to diagnose, or is it because there's not enough known about it?
By definition, fibromyalgia is diagnosed when all other items have been excluded. So it's a diagnosis of exclusion. So you do have to go through the tick box exercise to ensure that there isn't some underlying condition that would explain these symptoms that are going on in anyone. So that was the right way to go about it. But I appreciate that can take time, it can be frustrating, and you're trying to draw lines like a jigsaw puzzle to put the pieces together. I suppose what I had heard there from Sharon's story was the opening comment, which was the work level, the stress level, the physical stress. She was unwell at that time. That would definitely have been a trigger point for me going, okay, so the autoimmune system, the whole body system is under pressure, not just one aspect to it itself. And then, you know, sleep as part of that aspect was very, very usually disturbed very quickly. And then this is the whole thing begins to fall apart. You become more fatigued. The muscles aren't able to do the activities they want to do. They become painful when you want to do anything. And it just, you know, feeds into one top of the other. So it's watching the pattern of pain over time sometimes is the best way of making a diagnosis.
So is that a typical pattern that somebody would experience before they get a diagnosis? This kind of very uber stressful lifestyle and the body being under a lot of strain. Is that a typical...
It is. In this condition, yes, when you listen back to it, and it's, and you know, with respect, it's this age profile, ladies at this age profile, it just seems to add into it. There's some reason. We don't understand this for sure. We don't understand the detail, but you do see that pattern coming to it. And the pattern then related to not responding to particular medication, that's very common. So you begin to get more frustrated, of course, and you begin to add more into the system. And ultimately, it just goes into one big circle. And sometimes what you have to do is stand back and look at the broad picture and go, okay, where is this going? What was the trigger, perhaps? What are the options going forward? And thankfully, you know, there are options, and sometimes you do have to go through them, but there are some options.
But Sharon was describing there how there wasn't really much of a treatment plan put in place. Is that what you were saying, Sharon, that there wasn't a huge amount of a map for you?
Yeah, absolutely. For me anyway, there wasn't. I was fortunate to be referred to a physiotherapist then, who kind of gave me some exercises and some wellness techniques to kind of, I don't know, maintain my body for a little while.
And doctor,
and that's very reasonable. Yes, sorry, Lottie, I agree that can be very difficult. But in fact, activity and movement with the right range is actually one of the best things one can do for fibromyalgia, because these are the muscles that are just misfiring at that point in time. So what we describe oxygenation, which is a nice way of saying you're just getting the blood flow into the muscle, it allows the muscle heal themselves and move forward and try and rebuild up those tissues as much as possible. That's probably the most practical over time. That's the most evidence has been identified around that as being very, very helpful. So that's an important element. But like any chronic pain situation, you know, there's three or four components together. There's what we describe as the biological side, there's the psychology, and there's the social component to any pain profile. And that can revolve from interventions to understanding the pain component to it, and then in changing the environment. Like Sharon said, she had to step away from her job there. She changed a big part of what was probably her personality, going to work, etc., to try and rectify these elements. And unfortunately, it takes those big moves sometimes to try and get people back on track a small bit, you know.
We've had a text message in that I'm going to read to you, because it's a good one, saying, I've had chronic pain since 2016 following a car crash. Two discs in lower back. It's cost me a lot in my life. Former marathon runner and footballer, never mind mental health issues. Any advice from the professor?
Well, certainly, Lottie, the first thing will be to see, is there stabilisation, the mechanical side to this, and assuming that doesn't need surgery to be stabilised, which can be done with, say, MRI and a good review. If you're looking at chronic pain in that aspect, yes, there's quite a lot of pain interventional options that might be able to target either the nerve pain coming from the disc area, or sometimes the tissue around it, the muscles around it, what we call the lumbar facet joints, which are just off the centre of your lower back. They can cause as much problem and generate pain on a day-to-day basis. You must remember, one in five individuals will have chronic base pain. So an individual of this type of story, it's very common. 60-70% of people who would have had that kind of an injury, that kind of element, will continue to have low back pain. About a third of those will have significant pain, eliminating them in quality of life factors such as sports, playing with the kids in the back garden, even just being able to go and stand and watch a match or go meet their friends socially. You tend to put these things behind because you're just not able to do it. So the mental health issues are massive here, because people just want to step away from it. And I'm sure your listeners will be aware with the fact who have pain, they'll say they just didn't bother go to something because they didn't want people asking them about their back or their fibromyalgia or their headaches, and they become isolated and totally sucked away into their own thing. And of course, that's not what we want at all. I mean, as a pain physician, I would say, if that kind of individual, look, you need to see someone. You need to look at these, make sure there's all the options have been explored. Can we work with getting these right? I mean, even going beyond drugs and injections, there's technology. There's actually equipment, electronic equipment, which we can actually use. And that's what neuromodulation talks about, to try and pick out individuals, give them their quality of life back as much as possible. And as Sharon said, put a plan in place. And everybody can work with a plan. That's the most frustrating thing about chronic pain, I think, when people come in, and they come in to me, and I hear this story all the time. I've been everywhere. I've been seeing everybody. But there's no plan. And hopefully you start on a plan. And of course, you have to change the plan sometimes, but that's what plans are for. You've got to start the ball rolling.
And do you think, Dr. Hegarty, that doctors have a good understanding of pain at this stage? Or are we learning more things? Like, is the uptake in the learning process, is that regularly happening for doctors, so as there can be better plans put in place, maybe at a quicker pace for someone like Sharon?
It's ironic, but one of the biggest reasons people come to their GP or their AE is pain, 60-70% of the time.
Wow.
But unfortunately, we kind of take it as granted. We expect to be able to manage pain. Now, as a critique to answer your question, of course we need to do more. Of course we need to understand it. I've just come back from the World Congress in Budapest this weekend, and we've had, you know, new people being brought in, new ideas, bringing on new skill sets. So it's globally a problem. This isn't just an Irish issue. And we do need to help our GPs. We do need to help our undergraduates going through our university to see where pain fits into it, so that diagnosis, such as like fibromyalgia, such, the story that Sharon can be picked up much quicker. And it's just a little bit of lack of knowledge, really. And that's what awareness is about. It's as much about awareness for patients to say, look, if you've got pain, persist with your doctor, go back to them, talk to your physio, make sure you are aware of what all the options are in front of you, and don't accept it. Just don't accept that this is the end of the road just simply because someone said it is. That wouldn't be the right way at all to do it. But we're constantly building things up. And in fairness to Chronic Pain Ireland, who are promoting the Awareness Month, they have some good structures to help people like Sharon. I'm sure Sharon has worked with them, just to give a little bit of structure, a little bit of dig out from time to time, and add in certain programs. So I advise people to have a look at that, look at what the intervention components are available to us. And like for the Mater Private here in Cork, we do quite a lot of range from very simple injections right up to the top level of the technology to address things. So usually people can fall into the spectrum someplace. It takes sometimes a little bit of time to get our head around what we can do, but you know, conversations are good, and that's the important thing. We're constantly learning. The minute we stop learning, you know, we should retire.
And Sharon, listen, going back to you, what about your family and your mates? Do they have a good understanding of how hard living with chronic pain can be for you?
Absolutely not. Unfortunately, no. It's very hard to wrap your head around. Like even for myself, it is. But friends and family very close to me have stepped up to the plate, have been, like, my mom has been a complete rock in all of this, especially like through COVID, having to move back home and everything. She's seen the greedy nature of it all, so she really understands it. But other people don't see the bad times. Like, when you're well enough to get out of the house, it's invisible. The illness is invisible. People look at you, they can't see it. So when you're out and about, people just go, oh, you look grand, or you're having a good day, or this is just your norm kind of thing, you know. So it's hard to kind of wrap your head around, for sure. Some people have seen the twinges and kind of understand that way. But other than that, no, it's kind of hard to understand, which is understandable. Like, I completely appreciate that. It is a hard thing to wrap your head around.
Because I suppose the thing is, the naivety of maybe somebody like me trying to understand the difference between what is chronic pain versus pain that maybe all of us experience occasionally.
Yeah, well, yeah. I think the thing is that you experience pain, like all of us have experienced pain in our life, but this is kind of like, for fibromyalgia anyway, it's like you're being surrounded by invisible gremlins, you know. They're kind of attacking you at any stage. It's like having a loaded gun to your head. You just don't know when it's going to go off. So that pain is still the same as anyone else's pain, but it's just chronic.
Do you want to step in there, Dr. Hegarty?
Yeah, no, thank you. You're absolutely right. And I'm sure, you know, from the time you were on the dance floor and you were very sore the next morning, you probably didn't want to go back out and do a bit of practicing. But you don't have a choice. If you're in fibromyalgia, you've got a long-term condition, you have to survive. You don't have that element. And there are two different pains. There is that acute element, the one when you sprain your ankle or your wrist. That's fine. It settles down. The body deals with it. Chronic pain then becomes on board when it exceeds that a period of about 3 months. And then the actual pathways, the neural pathways, the neurobiology pathways that we have, they begin to change such that the normal signal no longer becomes normal.
Okay.
It becomes persistent. And that's the difficult bit, trying to reverse that from a doctor's point of view, and obviously from a patient's perspective, and from those people around them as well. It is invisible, and it is something we need to be fully aware of and support individuals as much as we can.
Sharon, can I ask, when did you first hear about Chronic Pain Ireland?
It was about a year into having fibromyalgia. I just kind of went on a Google spree for fibromyalgia and then chronic pain and Ireland and stuff, just to educate myself as best I could. And I came across their website, and it just had so much on it, you know, from what chronic pain is to from just being diagnosed to talking to your healthcare provider, and just different benefits that can happen from being a member of chronic pain. And once I became a member, then it opened me up to so many campaigns and resources, workshops, just different research projects that I could get involved in as well, to kind of pave the way for people behind me that are coming up who've just been diagnosed with chronic pain, to kind of alleviate their stress and their experience with different stigmas, or like dealing with different people and that kind of thing, just to kind of give a hand down to people who are in a position that I was in and had nobody, you know.
No, totally. And I think it's really important that somebody who has actually gone through it is there to help, you know, with other people who are starting their journey, because it's nice to hear the voice of somebody who has walked the path and the journey that you're on. Sharon, you explained how hard it can be when no one understands what you're going through. One text I want to share with you both explains just, I suppose, just how lonely the road to diagnosis can be. It says, "Hi Lottie, I have suffered for over 10 years with pain. Again, doctors kept telling me I had IBS. I was then told it was inflammatory bowel disease, and then they backtracked saying it wasn't that. It's just been so hard. I had surgery to see if it was endometriosis in July, and I finally have an answer. But before that point, I was going crazy. I'm made to feel like I was an addict who was almost just looking for pain relief. Mm. It's awful that patients can feel like this and that they're going crazy. I would love if we all had a doctor who just understood chronic pain." Does that resonate with you, Sharon?
100%, yeah. And that's the thing, like, it's, I know we're talking about my journey going through with fibromyalgia and the different paths that I had to take, and the doctor was saying there, that you have to it's a kind of a last resort to diagnosis, you know, you have to extend all these different options and treatment plans and stuff. But in my experience, talking with different members of Chronic Pain Ireland, who all have just varying different chronic pain conditions, they all go through it. They're like, be it irritable bowel syndrome or interstitial cystitis or chronic migraine or chronic back pain or anything like that, or endometriosis, there is a fundamental level of just disbelief coming from doctors. And I don't know if that stems from compassion fatigue on their side, where they're just kind of like, "Oh, I can't take anything on, anything more. You know, I don't really want to think about this. Just give me a gash in the arm that I can sew up and be done with it," kind of thing. Because I'd say they're overworked and stressed out themselves. It's hard to do it. But like with Chronic Pain Ireland, with this amazing campaign that's coming out, like you said at the start, 1 in 3 people are waking up to pain. There's only 27 dedicated pain specialists in Ireland. You know, 41% of the patients are waiting about 12 months for their first appointment, and then waiting about 12 months for their first treatment then. You know, there's not that much out there. If we could get it to a stage where, well, one, there can be a continual education process for GPs to deal with chronic pain, to deal with possible chronic pain, to deal with anybody coming in to saying, "I have pain." Like, even if there was like a leaflet or something that they could give to them to be like, "Look, these are the different things that it could be. These are the tests that we could do. This is the route that we could go down for treatment," you know, or even pass them on to Chronic Pain Ireland, where it's like, "Look, there's a ton of resources there for people to learn more about your condition, to learn more how to deal with the stigma that you're going to be faced from families, from friends, from employers, from just general people out and about. Like, people cannot see your pain. So you're going to be subjected to this kind of stigma that you need to deal with. And then you're going to take that on in yourself, and then like deal with this kind of self-stigma that you're putting on yourself." It's mental well-being. Like, there's one thing that I'd love to put to your listeners. It's like, you need to make time for your wellness, or you'll be forced to make time for your illness. Do you know, like, it's just the fact of the matter.
Professor, Sorry, Sharon, to cut across you, because I think you're making a really valid point that's important. And I'd love to know the professor's opinion on that, with Sharon saying that it's possible that doctors might just not be able to take on all of this when they're so overworked. What would you say about that?
It absolutely is an enormous challenge for any service, say a GP otherwise, even in the hospital system. It's clear the numbers are just outweigh what we can possibly deal with in that respect. And that's the first thing, we have to respect that. And I suppose the other thing, just for clarity, is the GPs and the people in the medical world, they do have to go through a certain sequence of excluding diagnoses that they have to do. So there's a certain pathway that we have to get that right as well. There's no point blaming everything on fibromyalgia or the like. So we have to be respectful. They have to make their clinical decisions. So we shouldn't jump up and down too much on them. But I agree with you. The structure is needs to be revamped. For example, in the University of UCC, we're trying to get more education in at an undergraduate level, not wait till the GPs are out into their own practice at that stage, because it shows from the evidence, the educational evidence, is that sometimes has gone beyond the learning curve. You need to have it in and integrated into the undergraduate program, then into the research into the postgraduate program, and ultimately into clinical practice. That's where the progress needs to be brought forward. And as I said, this is a global problem. It is not just an Irish aspect to itself. Pain traditionally has been the bottom of the list in terms of all other areas. And yet every single patient who presents will have pain in some shape or form at some point. As I said, 60-70% of people will present with pain. And it's the perception that the doctors can deal with all of that in the one go needs to be looked at. But also, I suppose, looking globally, you have to say, what else can we do to support structures like proper physios, like proper psychology systems and platforms such as Chronic Pain Ireland to try and help people and not necessarily rely on the one avenue all the time. Take away the bottleneck of seeing a doctor. Let the other services help out. And that might be something that, you know, government and these people need to look at and think outside the box and say, how do we decant some of the problems and rather have them all going into one GP's office, spread them out a little bit, get more chance, get a bit of structure around it.
Yeah, have more of a network of support, I suppose. But I can't help but keep thinking about if I was in a doctor's office and I was told this is the situation, the first thing that would cross my mind is, how is this going to change my life? Like, what kind of quality of life am I going to have? Can a patient expect to have any level of a normal, whatever is considered normal, good quality of life living with chronic pain, Professor?
I think it's a reasonable goal, to be fair, Lottie, you know. And I know when you're in a bad place, nothing seems good and there's no light at the end of the tunnel. But I think that's the job of the likes of myself and pain teams and pain is to try and restructure that, show where the light is and give people that hope. And very often it's getting that slight balance right of saying, okay, I can do these things and I can go over here, but there's other elements that are just not worth it. They're too much of an aggravating factor. And firstly, getting that confidence back. And that instills confidence into the body. The body recovers itself. And, you know, you can move forward. There's undoubtedly about it. It's very important because each individual sets their own bar of what they want for their quality of life. That's what it's about. And it's amazing when you speak to people with pain. Pain almost becomes the least, not the priority. It's the quality of life.
Yeah.
It's the ability to do things with their family. And that's when I focus with patients when they come to me. I try and focus in on those benefits and pick the positives, not look for the negatives, because pain is negative. Pain is a bad sign, let's be fair. No one wants that. Well, can we move over and look for the positive side to this? Pick up something that works, focus with that, and then you can move forward. And that then gives people a little bit of structure when the days are good and bad. They have some positive to feed back into itself. So there's no perfect formula, absolutely none. But there is hope. I would be quite the opposite, saying, actually, no, we can move things forward. And I would always like to see that there is something there for people. And sometimes you just have to trash it out and find out what they are looking for. And age groups differ. An individual in their mid-30s far different from the goal and objective of someone in their late 70s. And a pain affects everyone. It's absolutely gender neutral, age neutral. It's right across society. And I think we just have to really help out in so many ways. It's very important. And part of it is bringing it to the national forum, having it on the programmes like this and getting people happy to talk about it. That's brilliant.
So overall, I think what's important is there's light at the end of the tunnel. There's hope. There's people out there, and it's not just going to your GP. It's about having a network around you to support you and to find what is your plan going to be, what is your system that's going to make life as easy as possible and as high a quality as possible. Dominic and Sharon, thanks very much for coming on and speaking with us this morning. It's really, really appreciated. That was Professor Dominic Hegarty, a consultant in pain management and neuromodulation at the Mater Private Hospital in Cork, and 31-year-old chronic pain patient Sharon, highlighting the work that Chronic Pain Ireland do, especially this month with Pain Awareness Month. If you want to get in touch with us, 51552 is the number. We'll be back after this.